Hi, I'm Rhianna Patrick, and thanks for pressing play. Want to know who else I've been hanging out with? Well, take a look at abc.net.au/abcre and join me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
OzYA.
Yay!
Australian Young Adult Fiction with Sarah Mia Cox.
Fiona, why did the three of you want to really focus a novel on cyberbullying, which is really at the core of this story, but also explore those other topics along the, you know, on the outside of that, which is around friendship, identity, and of course, misogyny?
Yeah, look, it's interesting the way that stories construct themselves as you're writing them, because really at the outset, our primary purpose was to write about friendship, really, and the ways in which friendship can sometimes feel not as, you know, easy to navigate as it should be during the teen years. But while we were writing it, there was just, you know, in the media, report after report after report of horrible things happening that were centred around sort of private schools, lists ranking girls in terms of how they were seen to be attractive or not attractive, and just a whole lot of horrible stuff. And we kept sort of being bombarded with this, and it became just more important to us to sort of create the milieu that teenagers are having to deal with in real life. And of course, then that really worked well to serve our themes of friendship. And in friendship and girl friendship particularly, we were looking at feminism and identity and those things that you mentioned. So it just happened sort of that things happening in the world around us as we were writing it made that a more urgent sort of component of the book.
Fiona, in this novel, we meet Clem, Kate and Addie, which is short for Adelaide, and we meet some of their friends along the way too. But the story is predominantly around what's happening to them at certain moments, you know, in their lives as they are heading through high school. I mean, how did Kath, you and Simone approach the writing of this book? Did you get a character each?
Yeah, it was really interesting because we were friends anyway, and we always met to talk about work, our writing, and we were having coffee one day, and we can't remember who said it, but one of us said, wouldn't it be fun to write something together? And, you know, one of the tyrannies of being a writer of novels is the isolation. You do spend a lot of time alone. So we immediately thought, great, we'd love it. And we really do share a sort of a sense of humour and a, you know, political sensibility and values and et cetera, et cetera. So we thought, why not? And we all love each other's writing too. So we put a lot of thought into it at the outset in terms of making it pretty writer-friendly. And so some of the things that we put in place were that we each created a character. So I created the character of Adie, Kath created Kate, and Simone created Clem. So each of us had full sort of agency over our characters and sort of final say in terms of how they would act. But in fact, we also then worked together in a very intensive way, I guess, because we plotted the whole thing together, and we would meet and we developed each character's arc together, and then we would meet at every stage of the book. Like, for instance, every time we were embarking on a new chapter, we'd meet, have really long chats, and talk through all the things that we had thought would be involved in this chapter, and, you know, examine them, investigate them, see if we were still happy with them, and then of course go away and write our individual characters' points of view, then come back reading each other's work and discussing it all again and seeing if it was all sort of meshing in together the way we wanted it to. So there was a lot of talking and a lot of coordinating, but we weren't writing on the same page as such. So we each had, you know, some creative control over our own characters. The chronology of the book, as you know, is divided up into the 9 weeks of a term, and each week is, there's a wellness program. There are wellness sheets reproduced in the book that we wrote. So we divided those and the really nastiest posts. We just divided those up three ways and wrote those. But we also had this thing that we think sort of saved us, and it was also perhaps why the book took us so long to write. But we decided at the very beginning that if it stopped being fun and if it caused friction or stress in the friendship, then we'd drop the book and keep the friendship safe. So we never really felt we were under any huge pressure in writing the book, and it remained a sort of a pleasure project for the three of us, which I think we're pretty proud of.
Fiona, now, Take Three Girls is not just a straight-up read told in tri-narrative. You've got the gossip website updates which come into play. You've got the journal entries from your three main characters. Was there a reason you wanted to write it in this way, with those wellness exercises broken up through those chapters, as you mentioned, they form the term?
Yes, we liked the idea of that structure, you know, imposing a little bit of structure on it because of the three narrative voices, I guess. So we thought it made it a more digestible, approachable piece of writing if we had some sort of structure superimposed on that. We also were interested in investigating that idea of the fact that parents and schools and teachers have so much, you know, so many well-meaning intentions that they direct to their children and to their students about how they might help them, you know, navigate the world. But of course, there's a bit of a dislocation between what schools and parents say and what kids are actually dealing with. So we loved the idea. And in the very first part of the book starts with a really nasty post from Psst, and then it goes straight into this really upbeat letter from the principal about the wellness program. And there's this big chasm between those sort of things. There's this, you know, that chasm is where the teenagers are living. So they do end up, despite sort of poo-pooing it as a bit sort of naff at the beginning, they do end up sort of finding things to value in the wellness program, and it helps them in various ways. But really, they're learning how to be self-sufficient and support each other.
Well, that comes across in the book as you go through it, is this, you know, they're not convinced at all that this is going to help them with what they're dealing with. But as the book continues, Clem, Kate and Addie are all using their wellness. You know, there are these points where they check back in with their emotional temperature, and you can see that even though they thought it wasn't going to work for them, they are sort of subconsciously or consciously using the terms and the skills that they're learning in this course as well, which I loved reading that, of seeing how they went from being quite cynical to them actually using, you know, what they're being taught.
Yeah, it sort of sneaks up on them. And so, yeah, we like the idea of that. And in fact, in the very first thing Adie writes about is that the guy taking the course, Dr. Malik, has suggested they can write journals and they don't need to share the material with anybody. And Adie is in a lot of trouble at home, and she does write a journal entry, but the first thing she writes, I think, is like, I would never in a million years tell my friends I'm doing this. Like, she would not want to be seen to be playing along with what this wellness program is suggesting. But in fact, they all do benefit from it in various ways, yeah.
Fiona, one of the things I've thought about while reading this book is, can you actually do those exercises? And is this a kind of workbook disguised as a YA novel as well?
We would be so delighted if this became a springboard for discussion in classrooms. And you certainly could. And we've already had some teachers and librarians saying that they'd be interested in doing that. But also just readers can just do it privately too. So we'd love the idea of people using some of the ideas in the book to feel better about life in general. It'd be great.
Fiona, how important was it for you to include those ways of checking in on your wellness as part of this? Is that also part of it, that you want to skill up young people, that if they are dealing with cyberbullying or anything related to cyberbullying, that they kind of have some ways of dealing with that, or even knowing if they're not dealing with that?
Yeah, I think that is definitely part of it, and also, and perhaps even more importantly, just that idea that to sort of say to readers, you're not alone. I think that is a really important thing during the teen years, and sometimes, you know, like the idea that people who have had, like, for instance, horrible photos of them posted online, etc., they're quite often made to feel that they're to blame somehow. You know, obviously we're all familiar with that notion of victim blaming, and we don't want people to feel that they have to go through that by themselves. Not everybody has friends to talk to, but so the pages of a novel are sometimes a really good place just for repose and reflection. You know, you can read a book and think, oh, yeah, that's great. Of course, you know, that happened to Clem, but she was okay. She got over it. And, yeah, so I think fiction is a fantastic place just to reflect on those things. And yes, for sure, to build some skills that you might use in your own experience of life.
I loved the characters of Clem, Kate and Adie, but I think I'm more drawn to Kate, and I don't know why that is. I loved 80s, the transition that she goes through, sort of not only what's happening in her home life, but also who she is and the identifier, I suppose, that the characters have of her in this, that they've identified her as kind of the rich, popular girl in a way who kind of seems to have it all together on the surface. But as Kate finds out, there's a lot happening in 80s backstory that she wasn't familiar with or didn't know. But Kate is going through a lot of change and is really struggling with that decision between what she wants to do but what she feels she must do to keep her parents happy. It seems like there are a lot of the issues that these characters are going through are definitely things that I think, you know, you and I went through when we were younger as well, of how you deal with a friend who starts, you know, changing and sort of finding themselves more. It can be, you know, quite a hard thing for both sides of their friendship fence, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and I think for Kate, it's like a sort of a thunderbolt when she hears this beautiful experimental music, and it's her first exposure to it, and it's like, wow, total revelation. This is what I could absolutely fall in love with and spend my life doing. So yes, she sort of takes an abrupt turn off that path of I'm a clever girl and I'll start doing medicine after I finish school, and you know, my parents will know I'm secure for life. And instead she's sitting in a swimming pool, which I adore that image that Kath created of Kate playing her cello in the swimming pool surrounded by rustling leaves, and you know, recording pieces of music that she'll loop and use in her own compositions. It's just beautiful, I think. But yeah, very, very, very typical of the teen years. And I think that's why Kath and Simone and I love writing for this readership, because it is such a fluid time, and it is a time in which, you know, anything can happen, and you can do a U-turn, and you can all of a sudden decide, hey, you're not my people, you people over there are my people, and start really finding out who you are. And that's also why we love, you know, in this book we loved talking about the idea of feminism and these girls sort of becoming more comfortable identifying as feminists, because that's also a notion that some people come across for the first time during their teen years, and it's a really important one. So it's a real privilege to be able to write about things like that for a readership for whom it might be the first time they're thinking about things like that, and also, on the other hand, who might be going through exactly things like Kate's complete change of direction.
I also liked how they always referred to another character, Jinx, who is in a feminist collective, as, you know, as though she was, you know, kind of this weird person, but, you know, they don't realise that they too are sort of feeding into what Jinx is all about in a way.
Yeah, and in fact, they're convinced that they don't at the outset, and probably they don't actually. But yeah, that's right. And for instance, 80 is, she by the end is a pretty full-on committed feminist, but she's sort of picked up these ideas very casually from her older sister and all of a sudden starts applying them to her real life experience. So like when she's at that disastrous party and she floats past a guy who says hello to her and she doesn't respond, and he says bitch, and she just thinks, hey, yeah, this isn't good, and reflects on what the world might be like if it were girl friendly rather than a patriarchy, which it is.
I was laughing at you talking about 80, because I think at no point in the book would you think that she would ever take advice or think she was taking advice from her sister Claire, because they just don't seem to have a very close relationship. And 80 feels like Claire is like the perfect daughter, and that she doesn't, you know, live up to Claire's perfectness at times.
Exactly.
Now, for you, Fiona, in kind of tailoring your character, what parts did you want to bring to your character? And is there a little bit of you in that character?
Yeah, we gave ourselves the liberty in this book of letting ourselves use a little bit of our teen selves, which I don't think we usually do particularly. But in the case of 80, she's sort of struggling with a father who's an addict. He's a cocaine addict and an alcoholic. And I had a father like Leah, who is an alcoholic, so an addict parent, and was, you know, like really interested in that idea, which she is grappling with in this narrative, that things can look fine from the outside, but just, you know, open that door a little bit wider and it can be a complete mess. And I think that in looking at that, it's one of the things I love about fiction and the power of fiction, which is that it can build empathy in a reader. And so to show a character who looks like everything's just, how could things be more perfect at the outset for AD, but to just show that your assumptions about how someone looks from the outside might just be a little part of the picture, and usually people are much more dimensional than that. I suppose the other thing I took from my real life was that at that age I was really, really into the idea of clothes as art and you know, making and creating things that looked a bit different from what was available hanging on the racks in shops. So that was a lot of fun, making all of AD's clothes for this book. I loved it.
And AD's safe spot really is her cupboard, where she loves to smell all of those clothes. And, you know, when she's found something in an op shop and she's put it in her closet when she's thinking about how she's going to create it. And that's kind of where she goes when she is just needs a little bit of time out, doesn't it? That's kind of her wellness space.
That's one of the other things that sort of starts dislocating her former friendships, is that they don't quite get where she's going with her clothes. I think she's gone from being sort of looking a bit creative and interesting to being a really weird person. They don't think she's one of them anymore. But she's reveling in it, really loving the idea that this can be a form of artistic expression. So, yeah, it's a good space for her in the context of a family life that's pretty unhappy.
Fiona, do you think that, you know, when it comes to cyberbullying, we need to have more conversations around this, and we really need to teach young people more about resilience and giving them those skills to combat just, you know, how brutal cyberbullying can be?
Absolutely, yes. I think it's horrifying to me to see the sorts of things that people will, you know, happily throw to people, at people with. It's like last week with Ellen van Nieuwen, you know, in the HSC poem.
You know, on mangoes.
On mangoes. That people think that they can say really nasty things to somebody anonymously. It's just not okay. It's horrifying. So I think there needs to be a lot more talk about respect and accountability and, you know, responsibility, responsible behaviour online. And also a lot more talk about, I think, how we treat women online. I'm so aware of so many female journalists who, you know, part of their daily work is getting online abuse.
Is there another novel for you that you've been working on the side, if this took as long as it did?
There are. Look, I think we're all working on other things when we were doing this. Simone's nearly finished another novel. Kath's got a few novels on the boil, and she finished Words in Deep Blue while we were writing this. And I think I was doing the American edit for Cloudwish when we were writing this, and I've got a few little baby projects that are still very nascent stages, too early to talk about, but something for younger readers and another one for YA readers. Yeah, so we're all busy working away.